Hello, I'm Ian. Welcome to Creator Coco. This podcast helps you become a better creator by helping you learn from what other creators have already figured out. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us a tweet at Creator Coco. That's creator and then C-O-C-O-A. In this episode, we talk about some common mistakes that tech startups make and how you can avoid them. I hope you learn something that helps you become a better creator. This episode was brought to you by Fictionista. Fictionista is an app for writing, where new sentences, storylines, and characters can be magically suggested to you as you write, using the power of artificial intelligence. With Fictionista, it's easier than ever to create new worlds and write that story you've always wanted to write. No more writer's block. You can download Fictionista from the App Store or the Play Store, or go to Fictionista.club. That's Fictionista.club.
I love making apps and I love coding. And like ever since I left high school, which was a while back, I've just always been interested in making apps and starting my own businesses. And over that time, I've learned a lot, but also still, I still have more to learn, and I'm probably still also making some of these mistakes myself. And I just thought it would be interesting for us to, you know, talk about some of these things, because some of them are not obvious. I know some of them you can Google and be like, oh, there's a blogs which can tell you. But some of them are not obvious. So that's the kind of thing I wanted to talk about. So you're kind of a developer now, and you're interested in starting a startup for yourself in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Probably 9 years time. So I was hoping I could like learn fast and then get started later on.
Well, I really love that. And I want to encourage you to all, like, if you want to start a business, start one as soon as you can, start even 10 businesses and just be ambitious because it's possible for you to succeed.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are here to talk about some common startup mistakes. Sometimes you're a founder, you're interested in starting a business, you're interested in, you know, pursuing an idea that you have in your head. What are some of the mistakes that you might end up facing that you probably are not aware about? Or if you're aware about, some of these are also cognitive biases, which means that they are psychological and sometimes they're not so easy to understand or so easy for you to see. A lot of these are just my opinions. I've also done a bit of research to gather a few other items. But some of these you might agree with, some of these you might disagree with. And also there might be things that I have not put into the list, basically, that you might consider mistakes that I have not considered. And the first one, I think, when you're starting your idea is the foundation of your business is going to be the idea that you select. Like, there's no more important decision than if you're going to solve a specific problem. Like, which problem do you want to solve? If you're the founder of Uber or if you're the founder of Facebook, you need to be able to select a good idea. And the idea that you've selected is what is going to be determining the amount of work that you're going to put in. It's going to determine who your customers are going to be. It's going to determine kind of whether you're going to, you know, build a mobile app or a web app and those kinds of things. And one thing that I've observed is that a lot of founders end up selecting ideas for the wrong reasons, or they end up selecting ideas which are not really ideas that they can end up working with. And how do you know that an idea is good for you as a founder? I think one of the most important tests for an idea is whether it is something that you personally are going to be using every day. I know it's possible to build ideas which you don't necessarily need to use every day. For example, if you're building like a shipping company or some kind of a business that's online that, you know, you're sending stuff to people. But if you can pick an idea which you yourself are the first customer, where you, like, if no one else uses this idea, no one else is using your product, you will be happy using it every day and it's going to solve a problem that you have. Then in that case, you're going to be much more confident, because even if you try to share your idea with people and they don't end up using your application, at least when you open your app and you try to use it, it solves the problem that you had. And in that case, if it solves a problem that you have, then it means that there is likely other people out there who might also want that idea, want that problem solved for themselves. But a lot of founders select ideas which they themselves, like deep down, they know that they're not passionate about, or they're selecting these ideas for the wrong reasons, or you've selected a very difficult idea that involves working with a lot of people. Like, for example, things in logistics, things where you have to like have delivery riders, or you have to set up a lot of infrastructure. If it's your first startup, there's definitely nothing wrong with that, and you can be ambitious. But you should also try and select ideas which are easy to implement in the beginning. And of course, here, yeah, there's also the idea of implementing things in a more simple way in the beginning so that you can solve the problem in a cheap and easy way. But you need to be able to pick good ideas which resonate with you and which you want to use every day. And so, and if you use them every day, it means that you're going to see the problems with the idea. That is it solving your problem genuinely? And you're supposed to be honest with yourself. If you're not honest with yourself, you're going to waste a lot of time trying to sell this idea to other people when you yourself are not convinced deep down. So you start with something you're passionate about, a problem you want to solve for yourself. You solve it very well, and you're your first customer. So that you don't need to rely on people's feedback necessarily. And you can just focus on yourself. Is this idea good for me? And if it's good for you, it'll be good for your customer.
Okay, I don't really have a questions, but I really do agree on your sentiment that you really have to select ideas that you're passionate about. Because if you're not passionate, God, it's a hassle. Because from people that I've interacted with, people who are doing startups aren't easy. And if you're not even passionate enough, you're really not going to survive. So yeah, I do agree with your sentiment.
Yeah, and you've made a really awesome point there, which is that if you're working on an idea for the long term, if you're not passionate about it, you're going to be miserable. As soon as the difficulties come in and you realize, oh man, am I really passionate about this idea? You're going to give up, and then that's going to be a failed startup. So that's an awesome point. Also, Samuel, do you have any comments or any questions you'd like to add?
So for me, on my part, I have worked with a couple of people with startups who are working on ideas that they were really passionate about. But the problem with that is that they were blinded by, they were creating a solution to solve their, specifically to solve a problem that they had without including the outside market, like now the actual market where you're going to sell the product. So maybe you are making an app for savings, but you are the only one who has contributed to the user experience. That can be a problem. That would just be my thought. But it's also really important to have to be passionate about an idea, since as Sharon said, startups are.
So you've also brought up that's a very interesting point, which is the other side. So also some of this advice, it actually depends on the situation that you're in. So it's also possible, as you've mentioned, to pick an idea that you're the only one who is interested in that idea. And so you're the only one pursuing it and you have not gotten any feedback from other customers. So here specifically what I'm talking about is, does the product or service that you have created, does it solve the founder's problem? Like sometimes it doesn't solve your problem the way you want it to, and you're still trying to sell it to other people. And that's why there might be some friction whenever you're trying to push that idea out. But at the same time, you're also right that it's also important to create something. And as it solves your problem, it's also important to test that it also can solve problems for other people. So thank you so much. That was some great feedback. The other aspect is when you're starting an idea, when you're starting your product. So as Samuel has mentioned, it's important to be able to discuss this idea with other people or include customers or other the target audience in the loop whenever you are trying to push this idea out. And the question is, how do you determine that this idea is good? So you've determined that it can solve your problem, but how do you determine that whether or not it can reach other people? Can it affect other people's lives? It solved your problem, and other people, are they going to be interested? Usually you do this initially by trying things like customer surveys or trying to ask your friends and things like that. But I believe that founders who put too much faith in that kind of customer feedback might end up being led in the wrong direction. Because if you ask your friends and if you ask your initial customers, the people you're trying to address, they will talk to you and try to tell you things and try to tell you, oh, this app is good, or I might want to use this idea. But how people talk and how they end up behaving ultimately are usually very different. And so it's important for you to find realistic sources of feedback that you can use now to measure your idea. In the past, people used to suggest that you should go out and talk to your customers. But what I want to suggest is that you should build your product first in a small way and then test it. That's how you know whether or not other people are going to be interested. And also, you shouldn't have your expectations set too high. Like, you don't want to get a million users in one day. You want to get, you know, one or two people who you feel they end up using this product and end up liking it. So apart from you, are there a couple of other people, if you just leave your app on the store or if you just share it with a couple of people, do they end up using it? So you observe their behavior and you focus less on what they're saying and you look at what they're doing. If your app involves creating posts of some kind, are people actually creating posts? Is this useful to them? And that's how you kind of observe. So when I say you should create a product first, nowadays, it's very, very easy to create products. It's much easier than it was a while back. Before then, you had to, like, you know, I know, get developers and do so much work. But nowadays, an MVP doesn't have to be like a, you know, like a spreadsheet or like an email list. An MVP can be an actual app, because it's much easier to build apps with things like Flutter and Firebase, where you can build an app in, let's say, a couple of months or less, and use that to test your idea. So customer feedback and talking to friends. Samuel, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, I do. There's this great quote. I don't remember where I heard it, but it says that you should only take feedback from people you are ready to take critique from. You see. So as you have said, in terms of feedback, it's general users will give you any feedback. Sometimes they will give you feedback just to make you feel good, especially when you go to your friends, since those are the people who are closest to you. It's important while getting feedback to get it from the kind of right people. So if you have a product about financing, you are better off talking to people who have already worked with finance and than just taking general feedback from the general population.
Yeah, I also think that market research is important, but also retain your own grounds. Like, know what you want to take in and what you want to, you know, leave behind. Because sometimes, given the people that you're doing market research from, sometimes people don't know what they want. So they'll give you an idea of what they think they want, but it's not really what they want. So yeah, market research is important, but don't get too lost in it. Know what you want and leave behind what you don't. Yeah.
Awesome. That's amazing advice. And it leads to the next point, which is that you need to be good at simplifying your product. So because you don't want to spend too much time or money, you want to be lean, you should be good at looking at your idea and removing all the unnecessary features and focusing on what is the basic idea that I have. Okay, you don't need to build all these other things. Like if you're it's a banking app, you don't need to have users editing and customizing their profiles and things like that. You just need to simplify the app completely to its most basic form. And that's the first idea that you launch, and that's the first idea that you try and get feedback with. Now, let's say that you have an idea, and let's say you have a process of getting feedback from that idea. Another mistake which I see founders having, or founders getting into, is the idea of looking for multiple founders. You have an idea, and then the first thing you feel like is you need to go and find a co-founder. I'm not good at marketing, so I need to go and find someone who does marketing. I'm not good at accounting, so I need to find someone who's good at accounting. So there's a couple of reasons why I think this is a mistake. So the first one is that nowadays, if you look at the amount of information that's available to us, if you look at the modern technology we have, and if you look at the power that our smartphones and our laptops have, it's possible for one person to learn all this knowledge. Before, in the past, even like 30 years ago, this knowledge was much more difficult to come across. You're like, how do I start to do marketing? how do I start to do accounting? And it was much more difficult. But nowadays, if you just basically spend some time every day trying to learn, it's possible for you to learn all the other skills that you feel like you don't have. If you just have faith in yourself and you think, oh, I'm someone who can learn marketing. Right now, I'm not good at attracting people, but it's something I can learn. I can just start Googling, how do you do marketing? And then you try to put that knowledge into practice. And sooner rather than later, you're going to find that you're actually good at acquiring those kinds of skills. And if you start learning all these skills, you're going to be much more self-reliant. And the reason why you would want to start by yourself, I think, is because you don't want to have personal conflicts with your co-founder. You don't want to split revenue with so many people. And you don't want to have, you want to have speed. If you have an idea and you want to test it, it's much easier for you to test some of these ideas if you just start coding or start implementing the idea and doing it yourself. And you can also take more risks. At the same time, if you look at incubators like Y Combinator, this is in Silicon Valley, and also investors, they usually try to tell you that you should always get a co-founder. Like some of them even seem a bit more biased. Like investors seem a bit more biased to companies who have multiple founders. So entrepreneurs usually feel pressure that, oh, for an investor to take me seriously, I can't do this idea alone. But if you look at the statistics, if you look at the number of startups who succeed, or the number one issue that startups have when they're on early on, it usually comes down to founders disagreeing with each other. And so that ends up tanking that startup. But if you're able to establish something by yourself and have more faith in your own ability and in the technology that you have nowadays, then it's possible for you to succeed by yourself without necessarily having to include, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 other people. But maybe you have a really close friend of yours that you trust, and maybe that's also a good way to work. But I also wanted to just share the idea that you can also do some of these things by yourself. You don't need to have such a huge team when you're starting. So I'll start with Sharon. What do you think about that idea?
I actually had a question in regards to selecting a founder. Anything? Selecting a founder is, co-founder is something that you need to take really seriously, because it's what kind of makes or breaks your the foundation of your business. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I stand with selecting a co-founder. But someone once told me that you need to find a balance. So you say, collaborating on this, you should have one person who will promote your product while it's not perfect, someone who will shamelessly promote your product while it's not perfect, and another person who thinks the product is not good enough and will work on perfecting it. So, yeah. Trying to find a balance between co-founder and founder characteristics, that way you can always measure up or balance each other out. But
so for me, actually, I've fallen into this problem. I usually have an idea, get a friend. Since I have always believed that I'm really bad at marketing, I'm really technical, so I did it just like the part writing code, debugging, then the marketing part I leave it to another person. And this has been the failure of most of my product. Most of my products usually don't even get to an actual release, more than a beta release. Since I don't know, I do agree on you with this one, Ian. Especially for while your product is really new, you don't really need a co-founder. Work on it, perfect it. Once you are you, if at some point later you can add a co-founder if there is need. As you start a project, that should toward you. Right now, I'm personally working on starting being the only working on a product on myself. Everything from code to marketing. I'm trying to figure out how to work on the entire product pipeline on myself. But once now I release the product, then if I do need founders for financing, I'm a marketing, I'm a to get some deals, then I can try to add people at a later point.
Awesome. And I'm glad you also have examples, And I'd just like to encourage you guys, if you feel like you're not good at marketing, you can learn marketing. You can do it. It's easy. Eventually, you can even learn finance. You can be that person for yourself because the knowledge is out there. It's easy to start social media pages and to start making content for those social media pages to promote your own products. And it's easy for you to do that thing which you think that the marketing person is going to be doing for you. Because when you think about it, you as the person who's writing code, you're doing a much more difficult task. Like you learned something that is much more difficult than posting on social media. So have faith in yourself, and I believe you can do it. Don't worry about it. Now let's talk about financing and investments. The other thing which I feel founders sometimes trap you can fall into is looking for investment too early, or even looking for investment at all. One myth or one idea which I've seen in popular culture is that whenever you have an idea, the first thing that pops into your head is that I need an investor. Like, I need an investor, this idea needs to blow up, and that's usually the first step entrepreneurs take. And that usually leads to you designing your idea so that it can suit investors. So you start looking for founders. You start looking for things you can say to impress founders, to impress venture capitalists and investors. And that means you're starting to change your idea away from something that solves the customer's problem into something that can solve a venture capitalist problem, because you're trying to make it look like this is an idea that's going to make money for the investor. So you forget your customer, and then that leads up to a situation where your idea is not very good for either the investor or the customer. And when you think about it, an idea that's very good for your customer ultimately will also be very good for your investor. So if you focus on your customer first and foremost, and you completely ignore everything else in the beginning, you are going to have a higher chance of succeeding. So a lot of founders start playing this status game, and you're trying to use investment as validation for your business. So you're trying to say that, oh, I got $1 million invested in my business, therefore my business is going to be successful. But the truth is, it's the people who decide whether or not your business will be successful are going to be the customers. It's going to be the market. Investors are not perfect. They don't know everything. They're just there to kind of support you and guide you. And you don't want to get investors too early, because a lot of us usually start our businesses because we want to be free. Like, you want to be working on something you're passionate about, and you want to leave this idea of having a boss behind. But as soon as you start getting an investor, you already have someone breathing down your neck trying to get money from you. They're like, did you make sales this week? Did you do X and Y this week? And then that also leads you down another spiral. So my advice is, when you're starting your idea, completely forget about the getting investment in the beginning, unless it's an idea that depends on a lot of money. But if you have a simple an idea, if you have a simple app, if you have something that you can do for yourself, or you can bootstrap it, it's much more fun. You're much more free. You can focus on your customers. You don't need to focus so much on money. Because at the same time, as soon as you get an investor, you start getting pressure to monetize your product. And when you start monetizing your product, you start driving customers away. If Mark Zuckerberg monetized Facebook early on, and he was getting pressure to do so, Facebook would have been a much worse product. So if you're completely focused on money all the time, it's possible that your idea might not end up working out. So don't look for investment too early. And also, there are some ideas where you don't need investment at all. You can just be free, do your idea, leave it up. It doesn't need to make $1 billion. It can make a certain amount of money that just gets you through the day. So what do you guys think about that idea of investment? I'm going to start with Sheila, Sharon, tell us.
Okay, for me it will be questions. Like when okay, you said that we shouldn't look for investments too early or while beginning your startup. So what is the average time do you think you should take before you actually get into looking for investments?
Awesome question. So the answer here would be that investing is a business. So the person who you're moving, you want to get investment from, they're looking at this as a calculation. Are they going to make money? from investing in you. If they put $1 into your business, how much money are they going to get back? So if you can't answer that question yet, and if you can't predict in a reliable way whether or not this person will make money from your idea, then it's not a good time to get bit to look for investors. If your idea, you can't do the math, the economics, you can't say, oh, today we have 10,000 customers. Each of these customers is paying $1. This $1 results in $10,000 per month. And so if you put in $500,000, then in a year, you're going to make twice that much. So you need to be able to do that kind of a math. And most businesses are not ready to do that kind of a math because you haven't proven that your business is worth it. What do you think about that?
Okay, I think that makes sense. Like, if your idea is not ready to monetize, probably in large scale, you shouldn't be looking for investment. But like, a counter question for that would be, okay, for me, like right now I'm a student, and if I want to start a startup, I'll probably need some capital. So, where do you think I can get good capital without requiring like heavy investors that will require a lot of pressure to keep on monetizing my products before it's stable?
Yeah, so the amazing thing with software and the amazing thing with the modern world that we're living in is that it's much easier for you to create anything that you want without necessarily having to get investors. When we say you need investors, it basically means you need money either to hire developers or either to do marketing so that you can yeah so that you can so someone says, Sheila, you are the capital. So that's what I'm trying to say. It's possible for you to write all the code. It's possible for you to do all the social media for yourself in a way that you enjoy and you find sustainable. And you don't necessarily need to feel pressure. If you need to do marketing, the best marketing is the one that you start doing by yourself. And then as you prove your idea, other people are going to be much more convinced. Because if you approach an investor and you haven't done any work, then it's possible. First of all, they're unlikely to invest in your idea. Second of all, if they invest, then you have no leverage. Because you are completely relying on them to give you the money that you're going to be successful with. But imagine if you approach an investor and you tell them, I already have a million customers. I've already done all this marketing myself. I've been working on this idea for like a couple of years on the side. And this is how much money I think you'll make from this idea. Then that's a much more convincing argument to make to an investor than coming to them with an idea and they're always being approached with ideas. So you are the capital. You should have faith in yourself that it's possible for you to build something from the ground up without needing help from anyone else. I know it sounds weird, but what do you think, Sharon?
I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense because, okay, watching from like things like Shark Tank, they always ask for numbers. So if you're starting out and you don't even have numbers on how much your product has been making, you're likely to flop your good chance. So yeah, I think that makes sense. Makes sense.
And especially in markets in in third world countries like Kenya, for example. So you should invest maybe if you're creating and nowadays it's really much easy to do this and also learn new skills. For example, you are creating an application that involves a back end and a front end. It would be better for you instead of looking for investors to invest so that you can hire back-end and front-end developers, go learn the skills. It will take you like for 6 months, invest in yourself for the 6 months. Come try your product. Once you do have your product ready, market it, work with it. Now at the point now that you see now, oh, my product is already working, it's solving a problem, I'm receiving customers. Now you can approach investors if you do need. And I feel at that point you will have more leverage. That is, you will have more say in the deal. It's not like you are trying to convince someone to finance you to create a product. You are trying to add a partner to a product. That way they can earn money and your product can grow. It will be a win-win for them at that point.
Okay, I had some more questions. When you get to a point where you require investment, what exactly do you look for in an investor? Like, how do you find a good fit for your investment requirements? And also, where can you get great investors?
Yes. So when I was starting to make startups, that was usually also a problem I used to think How like where do you even begin to get investors? Where do you start? The process usually involves pitching to different investment companies or people who want to invest. I also used to think that it's difficult to find investors. Where do you even start? You need connections and those kinds of things. But something I'm realizing over time is it's important to have an abundance mindset where you believe that there is a lot of money out there in the world. And if you build something successful, that money is going to find you somehow. Even in Kenya here, there are a lot of businesses who are focused on investment. There are lists and there are investors from the US, investors from other countries focusing specifically on Africa. If you go to Twitter, you'll find investment companies. If you look even if you search on Google, you'll find companies who do specific investment in Kenyan startups. There's ones who do specific investments for startups led by women. There's ones who do investments in energy products and things like that. So there is money. There's money. You just need to have a product. And if you have the product and the product is working, you want to be in a situation where you're not the one chasing the investor. The ultimate position for the entrepreneur to be in is a position where it's the investors who are fighting, who are coming to you, who are like, I know this might sound weird, but you want the investor to be the one coming to pitch you, to tell you why they should be the one who is investing in your idea. Because you did such a good job of building your product that you have investors fighting over your idea or fighting over they want your shares, basically. This is what happens to Facebook. This is what happens to the Ubers. This is what happens to all these big companies. The investor, they're not the ones who go end up chasing the investor. The investor is the one who comes and is like, oh, please, I need to invest. Please, what do I need to do? And then they give you even better deals. They tell you they'll take less equity. Like if you've seen on Shark Tank, whenever they're fighting over good ideas, you want to be in that position. So Sharon, there is money out there. Whenever you're ready, you can always find someone who's gonna give you capital. So and if you have the right idea for those kinds of people, but even in Africa, startup financing is getting better and better. It used to not be very good, but it's much better nowadays.
Yeah, and also it's interesting that you've mentioned abundance mindset. I'll take that abundance mindset.
Yes. There's tons of money. You just need to be the passionate and you need to serve customers. Have a valuable thing and people will chase you. You won't have to chase them. Now, when it comes to setting up a business, before, like a lot of times when you're trying to start a business, you usually think, I am very good at programming. In this case, I'm going to use an example of starting a bakery. You say, I am very good at making cakes. And my friends are telling me that, you're good at making cakes. You should definitely start a bakery or you should start selling cakes or something like that. And a lot of us usually start our businesses through that way. You figure out you're good at a specific technical skill and you decide that you're going to start a business based on that skill. Initially, you start making your cakes and you start realizing that starting a business involves more than making cakes. I need to start thinking about hiring other people. I need to start thinking about managing this business. I need to start thinking about marketing. And so it becomes exhausting for the entrepreneur, and then the business ends up not working out. But one idea which I've found that can help you like completely change the way you think about businesses is changing from the idea of I'm an individual baker and I would like to build an idea and I would like to build a cake that I will sell to the customers. In that case, you're going to make a nice cake for your customer and the customer is going to enjoy it because you're the one who built it. But if you want to serve 100 customers, how are you going to do that in a scalable way? And the solution here is to think about creating systems and not creating the individual product. So you don't want to be the baker who bakes one cake that then you serve to your customers. You want to be the baker who has designed a system that generates cakes. And what I mean is you're setting up a system that results in the cake and you're not baking the cake itself. So you're thinking to yourself, what do I need to do? What are the steps that are involved in creating this cake? I need to first of all source the best ingredients, and then it needs to be cooked at this specific temperature for this long after you've mixed the ingredients, and then it needs to be served like this to the customer. And so you analyze each step of your process, and then for each step you try and create templates, documents, and processes that can fill in that step. So for example, if I'm starting a bakery, you start by thinking, what's the process for setting up what's the process for sourcing ingredients? And then you write down and document all the steps in an easy way, easy to understand. And then after you've done that, you hire someone. This is if you want to expand. You don't need to expand, but it's important to think of your idea in an expandable way. You can also do this completely by yourself, but you think about it as a franchise, as a prototype for a bigger business. So you say, now that I've documented all the processes for baking this cake, it's easy, and I've documentation. It's easy for me to hire someone who doesn't have any experience. So the test of your system is going to be, if you hire someone who has completely no experience and you bring them into your business, will they be able to follow the instructions that you have laid out? And will they be able to end up making that cake to the degree that you wanted them to make that cake at? So that you see what you've done, you've created a system that can take in someone who is inexperienced, and then it can result in a product which is very, very good either way. So you don't need to hire people who are completely, who are like masters, or who are very, for example, if you're doing marketing, that we've been talking about that, if you're doing accounting, if you set up your own process for doing accounting, it's possible for you to get someone who's not very experienced to help you with that accounting. It's possible for you to get someone who's not very experienced to help you with that marketing, or to help you with the product, if you have put in the work of analyzing your product and documenting everything, so that if they need help, they can easily refer to the templates and the documentation that you've already built. And then the result of the system is still a product that is the quality you wanted, but you don't need to hire the most experienced people. So I'm trying to say here that instead of focusing on the product itself, you focus on the system that generates the product. So if you have a good system, you can put in anyone in any part of that system, and they'll be able to still do the work because you did the initial work of setting up the system. So I know that's an interesting idea, maybe. So I wanted to know what you guys think. I'm going to start with Samuel. What do you think about the idea of setting up systems? Have you heard it before?
No, I have not heard of it before, but I do agree with you that it's more helpful to create a system to create a product than creating the product itself. And I do feel that most of startup companies, especially the ones that are started by people who are already developers, mainly focus on the product, because as a developer, you are used to working on the product itself, not on the system, on a system of making the product. But I do agree, yeah, it's important to create a system. And if you do have any resources on how to create system, please do send them my way. I need them.
Okay. So you can write this down. Let me put it here. The ideas that I'm talking about here come from a book called E-Myth Revisited. That is a very important book. So if you're interested in learning more about this idea of systems, I think for me, it completely changed how I think about business. Because you're now not focused on the technical work, you're focused on building a system. And that's actually how you end up retiring. Because if you, let's say you have a system, and then you start at the bottom, you say, how do I source ingredients? How do I bake the cake? Fine. You create a system for that, and then you can hire people to replace you, because they can end up creating those results. Then you move up on top, and then you start to manage them. And then you also learn more about your role, and then you keep documenting. So Sharon, any comments or any questions about that idea?
Yeah, I've had the concept of creating systems and creating the product. So you create a system that creates the product, but I had it in a term that is paraphrased to sound like similar. So what I was told is to think global versus local. So if you start thinking global, you're likely to think, okay, what this product will be, how do I create that in the future? It will be scalable enough, and you don't have to like recreate it from scratch to cater for any growth points. So at the same time, though, a question will be, sometimes some companies go too large too fast. So like you see a company that expanded way too fast, like since it has systems that can cater for scalability, they decided to expand way too fast too early. So like, how do you know that my company is ready for growth or for scaling to new places? Because like I've seen their companies, especially for cab companies that are local, like there's a company called Little. What they do is they go expanding regional by regional before they go nationwide, and then they go international, they start including more companies. So how do you know that you're growing too fast, or when do you know how to start expanding to new areas or new places?
So they've mentioned an amazing idea, which is the idea of having a scalable product. The first thing that we talked about today was selecting a good idea. In the past, or around me in my environment, the ideas I see some entrepreneurs selecting are usually ideas which are usually hyper-focused on a specific location. Like you want to start a startup and you're like, let me start the M-Pesa for Kenyans, or let me start the Bolt for Kenyans, or let me make this accounting app for Kenyans. And I usually never pick ideas which have anything to do with a specific location, because it's going to take you the same amount of effort to build an app for Kenyans that it would also take you to build an app for the rest of the world. Because on the Play Store and on the App Store, how you select your location is pretty much just a checkbox. And it's possible to select an idea where it'll apply for everyone in the world. So for some ideas, if you select the right idea, if you select an Instagram idea, if you select a social media idea, if you select an idea that's a utility that everyone can enjoy, then you don't have to think about, am I scaling too fast or anything like that. As soon as you put your idea on the Play Store, anyone in the world will be able to have access to it. So when selecting an idea, I first of all highly encourage you to not think about ideas that only work in your area. Because we all have access to the internet, it's also possible for you to think about ideas that anyone in the world can enjoy and use. And also when it comes to now scaling, when you're actually scaling, you obviously you can't scale too fast. If your idea is like locally based and you need to go into a specific country, get permission in that country, get customers in that specific country, then in that case, I've also seen that mistake of, and this was something I was going to talk about a bit later, but we can talk about it now, which is you don't want to expand too early. You don't want to be greedy. You don't want to feel impatient. And I feel like now the other reason now people start expanding too early comes back to the idea of you got investors and now you feel pressure. As soon as you start getting investors, they start pressuring you. Oh, we need our money in 5 years or something like that. So you start feeling pressure that I need to start expanding before your idea is ready. And that usually now ends up you've expanded too fast. You've hired too many people at the same time. And your idea ends up not working out because your culture is messed up. Your product was not even ready in the first country, but you've already expanded to 3 other countries. So there it comes to, when it comes to expanding, it comes to how much does the founder care about this product and how much do they care about their customer experience? If you really care, then you're going to realize that if I expand to Burundi, then the people in Burundi are not going to have a good experience. Some people only expand to please their investors. And you should only, first of all, so when it comes to, so summary for that, first of all, it's possible to pick an idea which will work for everyone in the world outside, like right from the get-go. You just go to the Play Store and you publish to everyone in the world. And that is amazing when you think about it. But a lot of founders end up selecting local ideas. So you should think international. Sharon, you're completely right, first of all, because there's so much more power there. And then second, let's say you've selected a local idea. In that case, make sure that your product actually works. And then always scale, like slowly scale properly, and don't feel pressure from investors. I don't know how you, if you have investors who are breathing down your neck, that might be hard. But yeah, those are some of the ideas I have around scaling. What do you think about that, Sharon?
I do agree. Creating products that can cater for international markets, even though they are not physically, internationally it can't entirely cater for it, but you create with a mindset that it can cater for anyone around the world. That way, it really makes things a whole lot easier. Yeah, so I do agree.
Awesome. Karu, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I do agree. And I also do think that maybe planning ahead before getting there might help you from being overexcited, seeing, oh, new customer coming in, I do need to scale now. Another new product, similar product has been started, I do need to scale now before they hit the market. Planning ahead might also be helpful to avoid overbiting, I think.
Yes, and you've mentioned an idea that which is important to talk about, which is the idea of pressure from competition. That's another thing that might make you feel, I need to expand, I need to start becoming big, I need to start marketing more, someone else is going to steal my idea. So if you're focused on your customer, and if you're using a product that you enjoy using, then it's not going to be a worry for you if someone else tries to do the same thing. A lot of companies have had lots of competition. Companies can come and go, but are you actually solving a problem that, people, do people enjoy using your product? That's the question. If the answer is yes, then if someone else comes along that you're trying to compete with them, you should always just ignore the competition and focus on how can you improve your product? How can you make this product even better than it already is? You don't necessarily want to copy from the competition. One thing which Instagram does is it's copying a lot from the competition. And in the short term, I feel like it's a strategy that has worked for them successfully. I don't know whether in the long term, whether it's diluting their product and making that product maybe less successful in the long term. But you need to have your own identity, have your own plan, as Samuel has mentioned, and know where you want to go. There's a couple more items I want to talk about. So specifically when it comes to tech, one thing I see that founders do is they don't focus enough on the quality of their code. Sometimes when you're starting and you're making your first app, you just wanna push it out, and you're like, no one is gonna see this code or something like that, and you just wanna write your code and push it out. But I feel like that's not a good direction to go in. I feel like the core of your product and your business is the code that you write. How well is your code organized? Is it, you know, is the data separated from your views? Do you have, you know, good testing and things like that? You don't need to like completely go overboard, but you need to have a quality code. As much as your business, you want it to be scalable, the core of your business is the code. And if you write messy code, it is always going to hurt you long term down the road, because it's much harder to fix code than it is to write it well. So it's important for you to, if you're not sure about something when it comes to programming, you take your time to learn it and you take your time to organize your code. And the future version of you is going to be very thankful that the past version of you took time to organize this code in a good way, because the future version of you will be able to expand that code easily, will be able to understand what that code does. And so your business is going to be much more secure than compared to if you have a bug and then you have to expand your product and the code is getting messier and messier and you don't understand how things work. I've seen companies which have like thousands and thousands or even hundreds of thousands of users, but because the initial founder wrote such bad code, the entire team has to work with this code and everyone is miserable. And that's the honest truth is that's how most startups are. So some you'll find are lucky that they have good code, but if you have bad code, it's just going to be a huge problem for everyone. And you're going to have to rewrite all that code from scratch at some point if you did not think about that. So you make sure that your code is well organized. It's going to be like, I know initially it's maybe a bit of hard work, but it's going to pay off. Like it's going to pay off like nothing else if you have very organized code and you can easily duplicate that code. You can, you know, you can play around with it if it's well organized. You can understand how it does. So yeah, Samuel, tell us more. What do you think? Any questions or comments about code? Any experience that you've had with code and things like that?
Yes, with this one, I think I have had a lot of experience. So I'm a self-taught developer. So you just learn code, what works, the most direct way at first. That is your goal. So as I was learning, I never learned how to write tests. I never learned any architecture. So I got a job at a company where you are working with PHP. The backend was already messed up. It was written with core PHP, no MVC structure. queries, you have queries inside code, emails inside code. Now, at that company, if you were to do an update that maybe involved changing one URL, it probably would take us a week. And it's a week of suffering. You are breaking things. You just change one bit. A part that you didn't even realize was connected to this part is broken. You don't have any tests to tell you that that part is failing. So now you do push the product out, the change, then all of a sudden everything is not working. There are days we had to come out of work at around midnight, even past midnight, just because we did an update, messed up everything. Now tomorrow we can't go home because tomorrow early in the morning, it was a system that was used to feed students in a school. So we must work before tomorrow in the morning, since once students resume and the system is not working, no one will be able to get their meals and everybody will be on our necks. Yeah, I do agree. It's important to study architectures, choose the right architecture, choose the right convections, follow them to the letter. It is a lot of work. I do agree. It's a lot of work at first, but as you go on, it's much easier to add new features. It's much easier to add another developer to work with the code. It's much easier to grow your team rather than having a monolithic application where you just add features.
Yeah, I actually do agree with the entire sentiment of focusing on your quality of code, because I'm also a self-taught developer. And when you're being self-taught, you learn a lot from YouTube.
Yes.
What I'm also learning from that is they teach what works sometimes, but they don't tell you focus on what's best. Like, they'll teach you on development, but they won't teach you exactly, don't give you the entire big picture of a production level product. So they will teach you how to develop, but not entirely best practices for a production level environment. So yeah, this within the last couple of months, I've been an intern at a company. Yeah. And what I've also been learning a lot is on infrastructures, architectures, and following best practices. Because if you're following these things, if you're following such conventions, it makes it easier for the oncoming team to follow up on what they were doing. So you find that the team is spending more time on creating rather than debugging or trying to figure out what the code does. So yeah, I do agree on the entire sentiment of focusing on quality of your code. But my question will be, okay, for self-taught developers who want to be founders and their best asset is on software development, so what would you advise? Do you get experience as a developer with existing companies to like understand how development work or production level softwares work? Do you get experience then create your own product, or how do you get knowledge before actually creating your product so you avoid such a big mess?
Just learn. I think you personally taking the initiative to learn these architecture, these pipelines of creating product is a much better way than depending on getting experience from another company, ama from a real production environment. Because come for my example, I have been to a production environment where they were not following the standards. And most of my friends who are working in they are working with products in production environment, but they really don't follow any standard. So I think it would be better for you to, because, and also for this architecture, there are multiple architectures. What works in company A must not work for you and will not work in company B. So I think it would be better for you to study them, then choose one, I'ma choose, and a different architecture will work for, will be best for different products. So I think take the initiative to learn. And I'm also in the process of taking the initiative to learn on how to write proper code.
Okay. So for that, how do you go through the entire process of learning on your own standards, the products, the entire thing? Because sometimes, for my experience, while trying to learn on my own, there are things I'd focus on and then until forget about other things that will apply. So maybe I focus on deployment and I forget entirely these like CI/CD pipelines and everything in between. So how do you ensure like you're up to date with good practices?
For me, what I personally usually do is I really take small chunks. So maybe I'm feeling I'm a bit behind on JIT. I'm a version control. I'll just take JIT on its own, work on a small project without anything other, but only involving that part. Once I do feel that now I'm already up to date, I do feel like I do have enough information on this, maybe now on every other product, I will ensure I do have to use this. But so I usually, instead of taking big projects and trying to learn multiple things, I usually do take a small project that it might not be important. It's not a production project. Something for myself. It might be a browser-based game. It might I might be trying to create an add-on that I know I'll never share these on the Play Store or the store for add-ons. But this is just to learn to learn how to write proper code. Then once I'm done with that, for the next product, maybe next product I'm learning a new skill, I will make sure to use every skill that I have learned previously. So for me, I prefer small chunks rather than big projects. But maybe Ian can comment.
My recommendation, if you're trying to learn a lot of these ideas, if you're trying to learn how to start a business, how to do marketing, how to do all of this stuff, is you take it seriously. So if you have a side project or something, you say, I'm going to try and do this as a real business. And you plan everything from scratch. You start with the plan for your business. Then you start implementing your code. You say, I'm going to try and use the best standards. Even if at that time you haven't learned what the best standards are, you try and do research. You try and take your time and implement. You don't rush through the process. And then afterwards, you try and, do I need CI/CD for this project? Let me try and implement that. After that, you go through the process of trying to do marketing. You test that as well. And then after that, you basically do the thing slowly by slowly over time. And that's how you're going to learn. Because as someone has mentioned, even if you go to a big company, sometimes those companies have the worst code and they will have the worst scalability. On the outside, they look shiny and they look good to work at. But when you get in, you realize your skills are just getting degraded because the quality isn't up to that level. I had another point. The thing you're going to learn, if you want to join a startup, or if you want to join a business or a company, if you intend to work for a company, what you're going to be learning during that time when you're working at that company is mostly how to work with people, how to work with a team, how to interact with your manager, how to interact with people who are below you, how to interact with people who are in different departments. That's the kind of experience you usually get when you're working with a company. But as Samuel has mentioned, even if you pick a big company to work at, usually you'll go there and you'll realize that even though this company is shiny on the outside, when you go in, you realize they have huge issues internally. Their code is a mess. They're rushing. They have pressure from investors and they have all those problems. So if you want to get better at doing some of these things that have to do with business and have to do with coding and have to do with marketing, you have to try and make it a daily habit. You have to get into the idea that this is something you have to, if you're passionate about, you have to try and do every day. These are things I try to do every day as well. Even if you're doing it for 5 minutes, you have to try and make it something that you do every day. So if you want to get better at writing code, start thinking about some of those things every day. If you're trying to get better at marketing, start trying to think about some of those things every day. And eventually you'll find that if you're putting in experience and if you're doing some side projects, as Samuel has suggested, while you're trying to put into practice these ideas of CI/CD, of testing, of better code, better infrastructure, then you have to actually try and do it for yourself in your own project. Anything that you guys have to add on top of that?
Yeah, no comments to add, but I think what you guys have mentioned in regards to you learn on your own because some of these companies are a mess. I think I'll take that as advice and try to work and better myself alone.
Awesome. I'm left with one final point for us to discuss, which is that successful young entrepreneurs is a myth. A lot of times you go online, you start seeing things like 30 over 30. You start seeing things like young 20-year-old billionaires. You start seeing all these young people, teenager millionaires, geniuses who are coding in their bathrooms and ending up with billion-dollar startups. And what I want to tell you guys is if you look at the actual statistics, that's a lie. And it's a lie that the media is perpetuating because it's interesting for people to watch. if you look at the actual numbers, most successful entrepreneurs are like in their late 30s and their early 40s. Even in software development, even in Silicon Valley, the average age of the successful entrepreneur is 40. And the reason why that is because obviously if you have more experience, then you're going to have a more likely chance of succeeding. And the sad thing is that even venture capitalists seem to not understand how this works, because they are mostly focused on trying to get young people who look like, oh, this is the next hot young guy who's going to succeed. But the truth is, if you're in your early 20s, or if you're even in your late 20s, or even in your early 30s, you still have time to succeed. And most entrepreneurs who succeed are in their 40s and their 30s. Even if you look at outliers, if you look like people like Bill Gates, if you look at people like Steve Jobs, if you look at people like Jeff Bezos, some of them started their companies and started succeeding very early on in their early 20s. Even people like Elon Musk. But if you look at their life trajectory, the main and most valuable work they did ended up being in their 30s and 40s. Steve Jobs started the iPhone when he was probably in his 60s, and yeah, they market the hype and not the products. Yes. So, and then this can actually, it's affecting a whole generation of entrepreneurs, where you start feeling that if you don't have the hottest products, if you don't start a startup as soon as you leave college, if you don't drop out of school. Okay, honestly, I dropped out of school because I just didn't like school, but I didn't drop out because I wanted to start a $1 billion startup, although that's not a bad thing to do. But what I'm saying is, don't feel pressure to start the next $1 billion startup, and also realize that you have time in the future, and that your biggest ideas will come when you're in your 30s and when you're in your 40s, when you've had time, you know, to absorb all this knowledge and to succeed. So don't feel pressure to be in 30, under 30. Don't feel pressure to do all to just basically succeed when you're super young. You can succeed when you're super young. There's nothing wrong with that. But also, if you don't, then you still have a whole lifetime ahead of you to succeed. And that's where, if you look at the graphs, like let's say you have two entrepreneurs, and they're both giving you ideas, and you want to decide, am I going to make money from either of these entrepreneurs? You are more likely to make money from the guy who is older. Like if you just ignore everything else about them, and you choose the person who is older, you're more likely to succeed with that person because they have more experience. But you'll find even a lot of venture capitalists in Silicon Valley, they're like, if you're in your 30s, you can't start a startup. And that's a lie. So don't believe any of that. You don't feel pressure. And just focus on things you're passionate about as well. Life is going to be long, and you should take your time to learn all the appropriate skills before you feel like pressure to learn and to succeed. So Sharon, any comments about that idea?
There's a lot of pressure with this new releases of young people being successful or young entrepreneurs being really successful. It comes with a lot of pressure, but sometimes experience kind of beats knowledge. So sometimes you're more likely to succeed with a lot of experience, hence the concept of being more successful in your 30s or 40s, and if you're a really young entrepreneur in your 20s or late teenage years. So yeah, I do agree the entire concept.
Okay, so for me, I also do agree. I tend to think that as we are young, instead of trying to go against the hype, trying to release product, you should try to build systems to create product. As we said, building systems is really important. So build systems. By the time you're getting to your 35, 40s, you already have systems to release good products, products that are meaningful to your customer, and products that can actually make you money without it being just a hype product that appears on the charts for a month, is valued at 40 billion, then all of a sudden the product is never heard from since it was not really a useful product. They were just marketing the hype.
Yeah, so guys, don't fall for the hype. Just focus on you and your own systems for building products. Are you good at marketing? Are you good at accounting? Do you understand how business works and all these things? So don't feel like you need to rush. take your time and become more talented. And if you're more patient than the other guy, you're going to defeat the other guy in the long term. The other guy might rush. He might be more flashy in the meantime. But if you just put in the hard work and you put in the time, focus on your daily habits. That's very important, that you make sure you're thinking about these things every day. And yeah, you're going to be successful. So those are some of the mistakes, the pitfalls, the illusions that are there in the startup industry. I thought some of these ideas were not very obvious, and I'm glad that you guys were able to join me today to have this discussion. I hope you guys learned something, and I really appreciate you guys.